Welcome to MTG Pro Tutor, your gathering of insights, tips, and advice from renowned players and community icons. Connect with venerated teachers to gain the knowledge you need to improve your skills. Now, here's your planar guide and personal tutor, Sean Penrod.
And we're back. Thank you so much for joining me in episode 243 of the MTG Pro Tutor Podcast. I'm Sean Penrod, your host, and we have a great guest lined up for you today. But before we dive into the interview, I want to say thank you so much to the patrons who support the show and also to our sponsor, Paragon City Games. Without you two, there wouldn't be a show, really. You two keep the show going. Patrons, especially you, thank you so much for your support. I love doing this podcast, and I really, really appreciate the support. And I love doing the give back. I love doing the prizes each and every month. I do a patron-exclusive giveaway, and it's always fun to send out some sweet product as a thank you to those who support the show directly. mtgpro2.com/Patreon is where you can go to check that out. And Paragon City Games, thank you for providing the prizes for not only the patrons, but also the league that we run and the other cool giveaways that we do here and there. Thank you so much. Great store. If you are local to the Utah area, go to Draper and check out Paragon City Games. And if you're not local here, then go to ParagonCityGames.com where you can see what they have going on there. That said, I'm super excited for our guest today, and I'm not going to keep you from him too much longer. So let's dive right in and talk about Magic. What's up, everybody? I'm super excited to have our guest with us today. Our guest played for the Dutch World Magic Cup team in 2016 and has won Grand Prix Top 8, where he was a finalist at GP Tour in 2017. Coming to us from the Netherlands, prodigies near and far, let's welcome the one, the only, Leon van der Linden. Leon, how are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm doing very well. And you?
Doing great, thank you. Are you ready to delve into your mind and share with the audience tips and tricks to take their game to the next level?
Yeah, I can't wait.
Excellent. Now, prodigies out there, if you want to connect with Leon, the best place to do that is in the Prodigy Facebook group. We're going to get him in there. You can, if you're not yet, you can join as well. And you can put a post and tag him in it, say thank you, ask him questions. But that is the best place to connect with him online. So, Leon, what do you have going on outside of Magic? Are you a student? Do you work? Like, tell us about, you know, your non-Magic life, if there is one.
Yeah, of course there's one, because I'm 30 years old. I'm living together with my girlfriend, and I'm working full time as a salesman. So I'm trying to sell a lot of white roses in the Netherlands.
White roses?
Yeah, exactly. Only white.
Excellent. Like to corporations, to people, like.
Nah, mostly corporations, because yeah. I work for like three different growers, and they bundle together to sell all the roses.
Interesting. So what kind of corporations or events need a bunch of white roses?
Well, yeah, it's mostly weddings, okay, and funerals. So that's kind of downside, but we make a good living out of it.
Yeah. So weddings and funerals. Interesting. Okay. Well, neat. So you're doing that and obviously playing some Magic on the side, doing pretty good at that as well.
Yeah, it's going pretty well lately, yeah.
Excellent. So did you grow up playing games? Was that something that your family that introduced you to? Do you have siblings that you play with? Like, where does the gaming part come from?
Well, basically it started at middle school, I guess, how you say it in English. When I was like 13, 14 years old, I met some friends and they were playing games on the Super Nintendo or PlayStation or whatever. So I kind of rolled into that, and then at age 15 I got an own PC with internet, so from there it started. So I played some MMOs and that's where my competitive side came from, I mm-hmm. guess. Mm-hmm. And I only picked up card games after high school when I was done and I got a job and I had a lot of free time, and okay, some friends introduced me to card games, and I was like, yeah, this works for me, I guess.
Yeah, this worth that. And we love to hear that story. Can you tell us your origin story with Magic the Gathering? Like, where were you? When was it the first time that you saw or played with Magic cards?
Okay, so let me think. Yeah, a friend of mine got an old collection from his nephew who quit the game, and he gave a bunch of cards to him. So he invited me over, said, hey, look at this cool card game I have. And so we made a bunch of decks, and we started playing against each other, like real table, a kitchen table Magic. So made a lot of mistakes. We interpreted the cards wrong, but it was very fun. And I think we did that for like 1.5 years to 2 years. Like, we got two other friends who played a lot of two-headed giant against each other. Nice. So, from there it started.
And what was your first set?
First set. So, Well, I remember the first set I started playing FNMs with, and it was Return to Ravnica.
Okay, cool.
So with the John decks, like Rakdos Return and stuff. So that was my first set. I started playing FNMs because we wanted to scale up our game, yeah. I guess. So the local store owner asked us, "Yo, come play some FNMs," and well, we did that.
Nice. So. And when you first started with your friend just doing the kitchen table, do you remember what set that was?
Well, it was a lot of different cards because we got the collection from someone else, and I made an equipment deck, and it was, when I look back at it now, it was really bad. But I had a lot of fun. I had was 60 card deck, and I had 16 creatures, and the rest was all equipments. And I was like, when I get this one good creature and equip it with everything, it's gonna be really fun. But most of the time, that didn't really work out. So
removal.
yeah, or only finding equipment when one creature dies, stuff like that.
Yeah, oh man, that's fun. So, what's been your favorite set?
My favorite set so far, I think the last set, Hour of Devastation, and after the banning of Marvel for competitive gaming, was my favorite set because. Was a really diverse meta game in standard at least, and yep. I really like that. So, I think I would say Hour of Devastation and the Amonkhet before, the combination of those two was really fun for me.
And along the same lines, what's one of your favorite cards?
One of my favorite cards, yeah, Gideon, the 4 mana Gideon that just rotated out of standard. That's my favorite card.
Ally of Zendikar.
Yeah. It's just so powerful. I mean, it was really good.
So for those of us who don't know, what is that card? What does it do? And then why do you like it?
So it's a 4 mana, 2 colorless, 2 white planeswalker. And it starting OT was 4. And the 0 was make a 2/2 knight. And the plus was +1. It becomes a 5/5 creature with indestructible. And the -4 was make an emblem. All creatures you control get +1/+1. Mm-hmm. So a lot of modes and... I mean, sometimes you just play it and use the emblem right away because that was better. Or sometimes you play the knight, hope it survived, and then you add ward control and can start pushing damage.
Hmm. Yeah, such a good card. I like that one too. So that's really neat to hear. You know, your favorite set, Hour of Devastation, favorite card, Gideon. So really recent stuff. So you've really been active, you know, recently in Magic and really diving into what it's all about competitively these last couple of years, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I only started playing competitive Magic maybe 2.5 years ago. And so I don't have a lot of, I mean, sometimes I play Modern and I really don't know all the cards. I mean,
yeah, me too.
yeah, it's just the cards are so old and there's such a diversity of decks you can play or strategies that I really don't know all the cards just before my time.
So when you started taking Magic, you know, seriously, like when you came into starting new FNM and things like that, what was an early challenge that you struggled with, but that you eventually overcame?
Getting a win at the FNM, I guess, because my first FNMs were just terrible. I went 0-4, and I was like, I really liked it, but I really don't like losing, so... I thought to myself, there must be something I can do here. So I started, well, like everybody does, looking at on the internet for better strategies and started picking up better decks. And I just really wanted to win some, not the FNM on itself, but just some games or matches to make me feel better when I go home.
Yeah. Your strategy was to start looking out at what is working and what did you do? So you go online, see the decks that are working, and you just... build them and go? Well, like, what was that process like for you?
Well, basically, what I'm doing now and what I did back then, like 2.5 years ago, is talking to people who are better than me just to improve my game. So at the FNM, there were a couple of guys who always went 3-1, 4-0, and they seemed to have a good understanding of the game. So I started talking to them, asking them questions, and basically reviewing my own game. And that made me better at that level. And from there on, I started growing, picked up a GP and stuff like that. So, and it's the same strategy I'm doing today. Ask people who I see better than me and then ask them questions or review gameplays or lines that I took and just to get better.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really crucial, especially that talking to people who are better than you, you know, recognizing. And it doesn't take long when you start going to events, seeing the people who, like you say, consistently do well, 3-1, 4-0, even at the FNM level. You just start talking to them, making friends with them and learning. And the Magic community is generally very nice people, so you can make friends because you all have this thing in common and everybody wants to get better. And obviously people love sharing their knowledge, right? If you recognize it's the best, then people like that, right? So just go up and talk to them and get to know what you're doing that you could do better and just start there. I think that's awesome. I think it's a really good,
exactly,
good way to go about
when,
it.
When you're nice to people, people start answering your questions. So I think it works both ways, right? If you show respect to people who are better than you, most of them just are going to help you with the questions you have.
Yeah. So you went from, you know, your humble FNM beginnings, and now here you are, you know, finalist at a Grand Prix and headed off to a couple pro tours. We would love to go on that journey with you and go through your ups and your downs, what you learned along the way. What are some of the milestones that you hit? So obviously most recently is the Grand Prix. We'll dive into that in more detail, but leading up to that, what were some of the magic milestones that you had that you can look back and benchmark your progress?
Yeah. So after the FNMs, I didn't really know there were GPs, and then one GP came to our country in Utrecht, the Netherlands, and it was standard. And so I went there and I had no expectations or whatever. I just wanted to play a big tournament. And I think I really lucked out and made day two with the old system. Or was it the new system? I don't know. I went 7-1-1 on day one, and I was like, really happy with that. And I thought by myself, well, maybe I'm really good at this game, but I really wasn't. So I went to GPs after that, and I went like with two buys, went 2-7, 3-6, and I couldn't really seem to pick up a match or anything. So when I made my first day two after that, like it was like 6 or 7 GPs later, really, that was like a big milestone for me because it gave me like recognition, like, yeah, you can still make day two or you can still perform well at a big tournament. So that was a big milestone for me in the beginning.
Yeah, making day two, that's a big milestone that many prodigies are still, you know, looking for. And they're like, hey, that's my next thing is making day two. I've gone to GPs and they're fun and I want to keep going, but that's the next thing for me, you know, and that's really cool. So you did that. And then after that was this recent top eight, your first top eight, right?
But I mean, I made 11th place at a GP later in the previous season, and I picked up a draw on day one, and that was unfortunate for my chances to make top eight. But that was a big milestone for me, like getting a big money finish. I mean, it's, you pay a lot of money to go to GPs and stuff and travel and to get something out of it, yeah, even though you don't really need the money because you have a job, that doesn't really matter. It's just you're getting something back out of it. That was a big milestone for me.
Excellent. So consistently going, I love that. You know how all the successes don't come all at once, right? Like you were going consistent, you playing, and then you finally made 11th place and getting some money back from there, and then here you are making the top eight. So that's really neat that you have gone on that journey. So I'm sure you've had ups and downs, you know, along the way. And what was your worst Magic moment? And what did you learn from that experience?
Well, my worst Magic moment isn't really one moment. It's a lot of moments. I mean, the PPTQ system we have currently, just been treating me really bad. I mean, I made a lot of top eights, but I never seem to close one. I think I have like over 30 top eights or close to something, but I never won one. So it was a real, it's a really bad feeling if you never seem to close a tournament or something like that. And now they invented the bronze level pro, and I made that by pro points last season. So now I can't play PPTQs anymore, but it's like, feels really bad for me that I never actually won a PPTQ. I mean, I made a lot of top eights, but I came close, but never won one. That's a bad feeling for me.
So what did you learn? Like, what did you, I mean, 30, like that's a lot. And obviously you kept on going. So why, like what was in there? What was in there for you? And what did you take away? And basically what can you share with us for people who might be going through a similar situation?
Yeah. Well, even if you're losing, you're learning stuff, and, I learned that Magic is still, you can be as good as you want. You can play as good as you want, but sometimes it's just RNG or the person who you're playing against for the slot is just way better than you, and that happened a lot because there's like a good there's a good amount of really good players in the Netherlands who aren't consistently on the Pro Tour or whatever, so they also play the PPTQs, and they just outskilled me in the top eight. That's just how it is. I mean, they were way better than me, and that's also the reason why I started talking with people who are better than me, just to get better and get on the same level. And I mean, that's just how it is. Take your loss and just move on. I mean, if you're how do I say that? If you're, you can't really get the loss get you down. Mm-hmm. I mean, every good Magic player, every bad Magic player, every random Magic player, everybody loses. I mean, if it's in the top eight or the first round, it doesn't really matter. I mean, there's always a next tournament.
Yeah, that's so true. And I love what you said. Even if you're losing, you're still learning, you know? And so as you keep on going and as you embrace and understand, like what you just said, good, bad, random, doesn't matter what skill level you're at, everybody loses at some point, right?
And exactly.
Just understanding that, embracing that, and being consistent and learning. Like you've mentioned that a couple times now, and I love that theme. You know, really learning whether you win or lose, doing your best to learn from that experience. And then don't be disheartened. Keep it up. You know, yeah, it sucks to lose so many times in a row, and if you need to, take a break or whatever. But just keep going. Understand it's a game, and your break will come as long as you are trying to learn. Because if you're not trying to learn and you're just going to keep going and going and going, then yeah, you're not going to see much progress. But if you're trying to learn and you're still going, then understand that learning process will, you'll reap the benefits of that in results as you are consistent. So
eventually you'll get there.
Yeah. Love it. So what has been your high or your proudest Magic moment?
Well, it's obvious to say making a top eight at the GP, but qualifying for the World Magic Cup like last year, I didn't really had results in the Netherlands or anything. I was just a newcomer, and then we played the WMCQ, the last one of the season, and it was Modern, not my favorite format, but I think I played a really good deck there, and I made it all the way to the top eight, and then just cruised to the top eight and winning that was my proudest moment, I guess, because it was my first big result, and that felt really well. I felt like I was on top of the world, or at least the Magic world.
And that was for when you qualified for the World Magic Cup?
Yeah, exactly. Last year in September it was.
Excellent. And then you were able to represent your country at the World Magic Cup?
Yeah, with way better players than me. I mean, we had a gold pro as captain, and then two other people who played a couple of pro tours. One person even won a GP. So we had a really good team, and everybody was like, "You're really lucky to be on this team." And that felt really good.
Who was the 2016 team?
It was the captain was Thomas Hendricks, gold pro, who was also playing Worlds this weekend. And then we had GP winner Mitchell Manders and Tijmen Blankenvoort, who already had like four or five pro tour appearances.
Wow.
But
that's awesome that you got there, because then you were around these people and these players and were probably able to learn a lot from them and up your game from there.
Exactly. Those three players are really good. So I learned a lot from them. Even though we didn't really do well at the World Magic Cup, I learned a lot from that period. So
excellent. So qualifying for the World Magic Cup in 2016 is one of your proudest Magic moments. That's awesome. I think it's so cool to look back at those accomplishments and acknowledge them. And that's really fun. So diving into Grand Prix Turin here in 2017, what format was that?
So it was a standard GP.
Perfect.
I think it was the last standard GP of the season before the rotation started.
Okay. So what did your preparation look like? We love to learn like what you actually did, you know, leading up to that tournament. How did you choose your deck? How often did you play and test? And what did that look like for you?
Yeah. Okay. So I played Mardu Vehicles at the GP. And I played Mardu Vehicles like before on a GP somewhere in March, I think, in Barcelona. And I had a pretty decent finish. But then all the combo decks like Marvel came into standard, and Mardu Vehicles wasn't really a good choice. But then Marvel got banned. It was a wide open format. And 3 weeks prior to the GP, I played the RPTQ, the Regional Pro Tour qualifier, and also played module vehicles. And there I made the top eight and eventually won for my first Pro Tour invitation. So, yeah, the 3 weeks between that, I just tuned the deck. I made some changes. I talked to people who were also playing the deck, and I made a good list. I played like, well, in the 3 weeks, maybe 60, 70 matches online. I constantly asked other people what they thought about lines or reviewing my own matches. And that eventually paid off at the GP.
Excellent. So you had experience with that deck, so you went with it, and then you just kept practicing and tweaking and tuning it as you, you know, prepared for the event.
Yeah. I mean, I think this the strategy of the deck really suited my own playstyle. And in a wide open format where there were like 10 or 11 decks that are considered tier one, I just felt I should play something that felt really good to me and where I can have an edge with sideboarding or whatever, because I know the deck so good, so well.
Yeah, so that I think that's really important, you know, playing something that suits your style and that you know well. How did you know what your style was, and how did you discover that this deck fit your style?
That's a good question. I played a lot of different strategies before, but I'll always feel like aggro decks that are like getting ahead on board and then presenting a tough to answer question to your opponents, like, can you deal with this? Okay, sure, then I present this. I mean, it just feels like you're punishing opponents for mulligan or keeping bad hands, making one bad decision because you can run over them. And I think the playstyle really suits me.
Yeah. And I love what you said, that you've played lots of different styles. And that's how I know, you know, what resonates with me is when I play different decks, I say, oh, this feels good, this doesn't feel good. You can just, it's weird. You just kind of tell, you know, something that, whether the deck clicks and you understand it and whatnot. And so finding those decks comes from practicing, just playing different styles and exploring different, you know, different ways to play magic.
Exactly. I'm not the best technical player. There's a lot of people who are way better at me at making decisions or something, but this deck just suited me, and in playing from my head, just, I guess, it's good for everybody, but it really played well for me.
Yeah. So what part of your preparation you feel helped you the most?
Magic Online.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just you're getting a lot of reps in a short period of time because, well, you have a chess clock there, and if your opponent plays fast, you can finish matches, 3 games within 15 minutes. So when I come home from work, I make my food and then I just play 2 hours of Magic where I can get like, what, 15, maybe 17 matches in per day. And that's just not the amount you can get in real life Magic, because you have to go somewhere or you have to fix friends who come to you, and then you cannot play against different decks because they're not available, stuff like that. And Magic Online really, really helps you out in play testing your deck a lot.
Cool. And what, like, do you just do like constructed leagues, or what format do you play on Magic Online?
Yeah, it's the competitive league where you play 5 matches, and then according to your standings at the end of the league, you get your rewards, I guess. And what I do with a lot of I Skype call with some good players in the Netherlands, and then we just share our screen and talk about different lines or sideboarding against different decks. Sometimes I share my screen, sometimes other people share their screen, but you're just learning from each other and how they approach the game, how they see the game.
That's awesome. Yeah, so just doing the competitive leagues and just playing. So you said that's great. You do 3 hours where you can get in 15 to 17 games. That's awesome. Like, that's a lot of games. That's good. And just be able to play and practice. And like you said, it's much quicker. And you know, if you play that much, then you definitely get to learn the hotkeys and all that stuff and make sure that you're doing it right. So
yeah, the hotkeys in the beginning are not that easy, I can understand, but once you played like 15, 20 matches, you get the feel of it and you won't run out of time anymore.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. So that's neat. So Magic Online was the most effective part of your preparation for the Grand Prix. So tell us about the Grand Prix. So you get there, and was there a match that stood out to you from day one?
Yeah, it was my first match, so I had two buys, and then I made a sideboard plan with my friends before the tournament. And then my first match was against the big deck. I mean, was Timur Energy, and I sideboarded all wrong. The sideboard guide was wrong for that matchup, and I sideboarded wrong, and I just got crushed. 0-2, no chance. First match of the day, and I was like, is this gonna be another GP where this stuff is gonna happen? Because you always get that feeling, right? You don't have a lot of those GPs, but you get that feeling. And then after that, I changed the cyber guide for that matchup. I played it a couple times more. It felt really well, and I went 8-1 on day one, so it was my only loss. And then on day two, I went 4-0 before I could double draw into top eight. So it was my only loss, like in the Swiss at the first round. So that's a big standout for the tournament, because after that, I just picked myself up. I changed my sideboard guide. I was like, sure, we can do this. And then I just rattled off like, 10 straight wins to double draw myself into top eight.
Wow. That's incredible. Well done. That is so neat. That's so neat. So then what was it like getting into the top eight and like making top eight for the first time?
Yeah, that's an unreal feeling, because a friend of mine at the same GP was like 9-0 after day one. And I shared a bedroom with him. And everybody was like, yeah, sure. He's going to make top eight. It's going to be easy. And I was 8-1. Still a good result. I mean, after day one, it's not that bad, I guess. But all the attention was on him. So that felt really good for me. So I had no pressure or anything from my friends, because you know how some friends can be like, oh, this is going to be easy for you. You're going to easy win this tournament. So I had no pressure. And then, I rattled off four wins. I could double draw myself in top eight. And that just felt a big relief. I mean, 2 weeks prior to that, I qualified for my first Pro Tour. Now I qualified for my second Pro Tour. I mean, how good can the season start, right? It was my second GP in the season and already qualified for two Pro Tours. It just felt amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing, really.
That's great. So which Pro Tours are you qualified for?
So I'm qualified for the next Pro Tour in Albuquerque in New Mexico. I think it's like the 3rd till 5th of November. And then also the one after that in Bilbao in Spain. And that's the beginning of February. And that's going to be Modern.
Excellent. Now, have you traveled to the States or to Spain before?
I did travel to the States before with my girlfriend to New York. But this is like almost on the other side of the States.
Yeah,
so it's going to... So I have to take some... I have to change my flight to Dallas or something. So that's going to be fun for the first time. But I'm going with a good group of fans. Some of them are qualified, some not. So that's going to be fun.
Excellent. And then Spain, have you been to Spain?
I've been to Spain before. I mean, Europe is not that big. So Spain is like 1 hour and 50 minutes. Yeah, it's like the same for you have with the big states.
Yeah.
I mean, Spain is like a state of Europe. I mean, it's not that far away, and it's quite common that you travel between countries here.
Yeah. So like in the eastern United States, you know, where the states are smaller, you can get to a couple states in a couple hours, and so that's similar to the countries in Europe. So
exactly. There's people who drive from here to Spain on a regular basis for summer vacation, I guess. So
cool. Excellent. So that's so fun. You're going to be, you know, traveling, doing pro tours. And so what are you going to do, you know, for your first pro tour, for example, how are you going to prepare for that? Like, it's always fun to hear first time pro tour goers and what they're going to do.
Yeah. So I'm really nervous for my first pro tour, because you always hear the horror stories of friends who went to their first pro tour and they're like, yeah, I went 0-5, no chance. I went 1-5, no chance. I really screwed up in draft or something. So that's just making me nervous. So what I'm doing now is limited is my worst format by far. So I'm playing a lot of drafts online. I mean, I lose a lot, but I'm learning the format, and I hope to get better at it before the Pro Tour starts. And then this weekend is Worlds, so the first results of Live Magic standard decks are coming in. So from that point, I'm going to try and find a standard deck that suit me, and hope the metagame is open, and going to try and become really good with the deck, and just hope I can make day two, or at least get some wins at the Pro Tour. That's my main goal.
Yeah, this is really interesting, because you know, this is the first Pro Tour that they've, you know, pushed out several weeks after the release of the set. So,
exactly.
You know, Ixalan came out, pre-release was last week, two weekends ago, something like that. And
yeah.
We don't have the Pro Tour for, you said, till like November. So we have pretty much the whole month here plus some. So what are you learning? So far you said that you've been drafting a lot. And what has stood out to you in just these first couple weeks of drafting Magic or Ixalan?
Yeah, so the format is really tempo-based, I feel, like Ixalan Draft is. So when you get ahead on board and you can just remove a creature or get them to not block profitably for them, you're probably going to win the game. So it's a really aggressive format, and I don't think you have a lot of time to do fancy stuff with big mana cards.
Cool, and that's... You know, we're not going to hold your feet to the fire on that one. Like, that's just here in the first couple of weeks. And obviously, you know, you can learn more when the Pro Tour comes around. But it's always fun to, yeah, just to hear what people are doing. We're about to, as of this recording, we are starting a sealed league with the Prodigies, the listeners of the show. And so it's going to be fun to dive into there and, you know, play Ixalan and see what happens. And so it's going to be, yeah, it's going to be my first real experience doing Ixalan. So
I can give you a sealed tip.
Please.
If you're going to play the sealed deck, try not to get into vampires.
Huh.
I mean, really? sealed is a little bit slower. And I think vampires need a lot of synergy to be good in sealed. And it just really feels like because the set is really tribal. And I really feel like Merfolk, Pirates, or Dinosaurs is just way better than Vampires in Sealed. So
good to know.
I think that's a trap. So
good to know. Well, again, as of this recording, we'll be getting our pools, you know, tomorrow and the day after. And when this goes live, we will be, you know, playing our first couple of games. So that's good to know. So yeah. So,
okay.
So Vampire Tribal, not so hot in Sealed. And then obviously in draft, if you can hand pick the vampire cards, and that might work out a little bit better. Is it so
exactly.
far? Is it worth, I guess, for lack of better words, like forcing a tribal in your draft, or is it, are the tribes not that strong?
Well, I think it's a really tribal based format, but it's the opinions differ in our playtesting group about forcing. We have some who like to force certain archetypes like Merfolk, but when it's not open and you force the four picks into Merfolk, you're going to end up with a really bad deck.
Okay.
So I try to stay open in the first 5 to 6 picks.
Yeah.
But after that, I really need to be locked on a tribe and hope that the other people in the draft also rank the cards the same as me. So if they're passing a good Merfolk card on, like, say, the 5th pick, I hope they also view it as a good Merfolk card, so they're not into Merfolk, and I just dive right in.
Yeah.
Because the set is not really that deep into playables. So if you're only picking, if you're only deciding into pack two what you're going to play, then you're going to have a big problem.
So after you've stayed open for a little bit, and then you're kind of picking your archetype, do you always end up with a tribe, or are there like non-tribe archetypes that work?
Well, sometimes, most of the time you end up in a tribe,
okay.
But I've had decent results with like a black-white vampire / pirate. So I have some vampire synergy and some pirate synergy, but the most synergy is just play a creature, hope it sticks, attack, play a trick, or remove his guy. And I mean, that's just how a fast format goes, I guess. Sometimes you win on synergy, sometimes you just win on pure aggression.
Yeah. Ah, love it. Can't wait to dive in and play more. Like this set looks pretty sweet, so I'm excited to dive into it more. So it's pretty cool. So obviously, Leon, you've played a lot of Magic all over the world, different levels of events. What has been the biggest mistake that you see players make?
Taking sideboarding not seriously. We play a best of three in Magic, and most of the time you're going to play two sideboard games. And I see a lot of people who come into tournaments unprepared with their sideboard. I mean, their sideboard can be really good, can be from a list from the internet, and can be really made well by the guy. But if you don't know how to sideboard with the list, if your answers or your whatever is going to line up wrong on like how they sideboard, you're probably not going to win the game. So if you keep in your cheap removal and they sideboard into a planeswalker plan, you're going to have a big trouble. So I mean, make a good sideboard plan. Know how your opponent is going to sideboard. That's also important. And that's the biggest mistake I see people make, not give enough attention to the sideboard plan.
So how can we get better at that?
make sideboard plans, I guess. Yeah, I mean, if you build your deck, don't build your 60 main deck cards and 15 sideboard cards. I mean, try to make a 75 and then put 15 cards that could also be in the main deck or in certain situation be good in the main deck in the sideboard and know when they're good and when they're bad.
I was going to ask you, like, how do you go about it? It sounds like that's what you do. So you build, you know, you look at the 75 cards as a whole package and then pick the best 60 and the most well-rounded of those to be the main board, and then the others are in the sideboard.
Yeah, I can give an example. Like the Mardu Vehicles list I run had a good 60 mainboard cards, but there were also some cards in the sideboard, like the Ford removal spell or two extra planeswalkers of the same kind that were good in the mainboard, but not as a four off. But after sideboard, most games would slow down. Mm-hmm. So then are the two extra planeswalkers are extremely good. So you put them in. So I had like two Gideon main and two Gideon side. And after sideboard against most decks, I had four Gideon main.
Got it. I love that. That's a really good way to go about it. And like you said, just take it seriously. Like think about it ahead of time. Come up with a plan. And so I love that. I can't stress how important that is actually having a sideboard plan, not trying to figure it out at your event. Take some time ahead of time to say, hey, here's my deck. Here's what I'm going to go up against. Most likely you can see the popular decks online. So just, you know, make a sideboard plan against those at least and say, all right, in this matchup, this comes out, this comes in, and know why. You know, don't just follow some guide online or whatever. Come up with your own, guide and then talk to people about it. And the deeper you get into that process yourself, the better prepared you'll be for your event, I feel.
Exactly. And take your time to write it down, because sometimes in the heat of the moment, you're going to forget about that card that's really good against him. And after the game, you're going to feel stupid that you did not write it down, because that's really easy and it's allowed.
So in a event, because this has happened to me, like, you know, I have my guide. I'm like, okay, so in this matchup, I'm going to take this out, take this in. So then I'm playing against this matchup or whatever, but they're playing cards that are, like, it's not like your typical, you know, build of this particular matchup, for example. And then sometimes I go, okay, well, I saw this particular card, and so I think maybe this other sideboard card might be better for that. That isn't part of my normal swap in, swap out plan that I came ready to do. What do you do in that situation? Is it, obviously, my gut tells me it's a dynamic thing and kind of, you know, adjust your sideboard plan according to the matchup. But what are your thoughts on that? Should you just kind of stick with your plan if the matchup is 80% of what you were expecting, or what?
So you mean like if they bring like a lot of enchantments in that you didn't really expect, or that's like an example?
Yeah, let's say you're playing Mardu Vehicles and they're playing, I don't know, what was the popular matchup that you ran up against?
I guess Teemer Energy or Mono Red.
So Teemer Energy. So you're playing against Teemer Energy. And so, yeah, okay, I got this. They're playing Teemer Energy. I'm on Vehicles. I know what to do. But then they're playing cards that aren't typical, like aren't on your standard Teemer Energy list. And you're like, okay, so it's Teemer Energy, but they've obviously done their own little tweak to it. What do you do? Do you tweak your sideboard at that, or you just say, here's my Teemer Energy package. Boom. Let's go to game two. Like, what does that look like?
Yeah. Well, nowadays, most main decks don't really differ a lot from the main decks that you see online. Maybe one or two cards, but you can't really change a lot of your sideboard plan depending on one or two cards. Because what you see in game one might only be 20 cards, and you can't really expect to know the rest of his deck. So my advice would be just to stick to your own plan. And after sideboarding, if you see something that's really weird or you didn't expect and you have good cards against that in your sideboard, don't be afraid to change them up, but don't let your opponent know. I mean, a lot of people sideboarding and they pick, like, after the match they're like very emotional and take the four cards out that they think they're bad and just put four other cards in. I mean, your opponent is gonna know what is up. So a lot of the times I just put all my sideboard cards in my deck. Only if I'm not, even if I'm not going to sideboard at all, if we have a lot of time, and just take out 15 cards again. So your opponent doesn't know that you're going to change your sideboard plan, or that you're not going to change your sideboard plan, or whatever. Just don't give them information you shouldn't be giving him.
Got it. So in general, if they're playing a known archetype, Teemer Energy or whatever, even if you see a couple off-kilter cards. Stick with your sideboarding plan, unless you have something that specifically you feel will answer some of those like weird cards that you see. But in general, people play the lists that are doing well, and they're not going to deviate too far from them. So just stick with your plan, and then and then also be careful of how you sideboard so you don't give away too much information.
Exactly.
Love it. Very good stuff. So, Leon, what have you learned from Magic that you've been able to apply to other areas of your life?
Oh, that's a really deep question, Sean. Try to be I see a lot of Magic players who really dive into the game and get really serious, and I think that's okay during the game and the match. But after the match, even if you've lost, and you lost because whatever, you made a mistake, he made a mistake, doesn't really matter. Just be nice after the match. I always try to thank my opponent for the match and wish them good luck in the next rounds. But I see a lot of people who are not, how do you say that, graceful in defeat?
Yeah, I'm
not
sure. Yeah, gracious.
Gracious in defeat. I mean, that's what I take away in real life. I just always try to be nice, even if, like, after a conversation at work or something, I have to fire someone or tell them they're not doing their job wrong. Correctly, I mean, just try to be nice and bring it in a way that they can like continue their way or continue their tournament.
So I love that. Even in situations, so in Magic, we're faced situations where, you know, we win, we lose, and we get to experience a whole range of emotions. And so you have practiced being gracious, whether you win or lose, you know, shaking hands, good game, good luck moving forward, and taking that attitude of always being polite, always being kind, treating people with respect, no matter how you're feeling based on the outcome of, you know, the game, for example, and taking that to real life and to other areas of your life, I should say, because Magic is real life. Anyway, so other areas of your life where where you are kind and gracious and respect to the people, regardless of the situation. Like you said, whether it's a tough work situation where you have to, you know, correct people for not doing as well as they should, or relationships, or whatever it happens to be, just remembering treating people with respect, being kind, being gracious. And I think that's a really neat thing that you can practice in Magic and you can take away and then apply it to other areas of your life. So thank you so much for sharing. That's really cool.
Okay.
What have you seen in yourself? How have you grown as a person through playing Magic?
You're asking tough questions.
Yeah,
Sean.
We get to the hard stuff now.
Like the really deep emotional stuff. Maybe I'm not playing Magic long enough to really find something inside me that...
Any kind of growth that you've experienced?
Well, I've become more socially. Mm-hmm. How do you say that? I mean, I was also always a social person, but in Magic tournaments, you're kind of forced to be social. So, I made a lot of friends with Magic that I don't think I would have made without Magic. I mean,
that's so fun. I love that about Magic. I love how, because we have this common thing, this game that we all, you know, that we all love, we have that common ground to build relationships off of. I absolutely love that way. And like you said, Magic puts us in situations where we're forced to be social. You know, we have to interact with our opponent in some way, shape, or form, whether that's, waiting for, you know, permission to cast our spells because they might have a counter or whatever, or just there's interaction built into the game. And so we can go beyond that and interact with them outside the game as well and build those relationships and friendships. And a lot of people have experienced that growth and become, you know, more social and better at maintaining relationships because of the situations that Magic puts them in. So I think that's really neat.
Exactly. You can't be looking at your phone during a Magic match.
Yeah, right, so, right. I love that. So going back to the Magic side of things, what are your shortcomings as a Magic player? Like, what are some aspects that you are working to improve?
So my limited game is not on par on what it should be, because I started playing with Constructed and I only played Constructed and I only played limited when it was necessary. And like on the detail side, I think I can grow a lot in seeing the game progress in turns ahead of time. So when I'm making a play, you should always think like one or two turns ahead, but there's a lot of players who even think 4 or 5 turns ahead, and I'm not really capable of doing that right now, or not on par on what they do, and yeah. like to grow on in that level.
Yeah, that's I think it's important to recognize where our shortcomings are, and then because then we have an action plan, a way to go about fixing them. And so that's really neat that you're taking that personal stock and that you know where to go and what to do to improve. So that's really neat. What would you say is your best format, Leon?
It's by far standard.
Okay.
I mean, I won the WMCQ and in modern, but I think modern is a less skillful format than standard. And I mean, may not have had my biggest results in standard besides the GP finish. But yeah, I play a lot of standard. I really like standard, so yeah. I think that's my best format by far.
So this is fun because we are at the beginning of a new standard with huge shakeups. You know, like 4 sets going out. So what are you doing right now? Like what's working? What have you been testing? Let's talk a little bit about what's going on in standard.
Yeah, so I'm in a testing group for the Pro Tour with some people I met at GPs, and they are regulars on the Pro Tour, or they qualify like 1 or 2 times per season, and they asked me to test with them. So for me, that's kind of new, but for them, it's they've done it before, so they have a lot of experience, and they're just waiting at the moment. I mean, there's a lot of good deck builders online. I mean, and they constantly play standard and they try to improve their decks and stuff. And most of the time people are just waiting for the results and try to pick up from there. I mean, you have to recognize that you're not John Finkel or Paolo Vitor Dominarosa. I mean, they're like the best of the best and they can probably have good test groups so who can make their own decks or try to recreate a meta game or whatever. But we recognize that we're not that good and we're just waiting for good decks to come online and try to improve those and just improve our matchups at the expected meta game.
All right. So what events are coming up that you guys will be able to get your data points from?
Yeah, so last weekend you had Star City Games, and Star City Games is always the first one who has a standard tournament after a rotation or after a new set. And they had some results that were good for us. And then this weekend you have Worlds, where there's, I think, 24 players competing for to be the world champion, and also 2 teams competing for, I guess, best team in the world. And they also have to play standard. And there's a lot of, I mean, the best players in the world are playing that tournament. So those results are probably going to be defining for the Pro Tour meta, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. And that's good that you have, your guys' sights set on the events to look for and then take the work that's been done to get to that point and then move forward from there so you can get ready for the Pro Tour. So
yeah, really it would be stupid to do all the work yourself because, I mean, there's a lot of good players out there and they're a lot better at deck building than the most of us. So,
but surely you've at least, no Magic player, I think, can go without brewing something in my brain, like at least thinking, oh, I wonder if this card would work or something. So I'm sure there's some of that going on.
Yeah, sure. I'm still wondering if, well, probably not Mardu, but a vehicle strategy is viable.
Okay,
but
cool.
I'm not really sure if that's the case, but I'm willing to test it out.
Cool. I was going to say, is there a card or an archetype that you're like, oh, I really hope this works? And so you're kind of hoping that vehicles has some legs?
Yeah, I mean, Heart of Kieran is a really good Magic card. I'm really hoping that a strategy still supports it.
Yeah.
And if that's good enough, and I think it's good enough, then I'm willing to play it.
Cool. I am always interested in Planeswalker strategies. Like one of my favorite decks and the best I ever did was the black white control that had a bunch of Planeswalkers, several seasons ago. And so I just love, Planeswalker decks or whatever. So I'm always interested. Oh, will the Planeswalker strategy work? And Heart of Kieran's pretty good for that because you can crew it with loyalty. So that's nice.
Exactly. But it's looking kind of grim for Planeswalker strategies, I think. I mean, they just released an insanely good card against Planeswalkers, like Hostage Taker.
Yeah.
I mean, you play your Planeswalker, he steals it. And if you're not getting rid of the Hostage Taker, he's going to cast it. So
yeah. That's so nuts.
Like, that card has an insane impact on the upcoming standard format.
Yeah. I saw that card and somebody posted like, I got this before the price hike or whatever. And, he was proud. Yeah, good for him. And then I looked at it and read the card. I was like, yeah, okay, good for you, buddy. Like, that's definitely going to have an impact. So
Yeah, that's going to be a big card.
Oh, that's cool. Very cool. Sweet. Well, this has been great learning about your origin story and your comeuppance, the ups and downs, and your best format, and what you think about Limited right now. It's been really fun. And I'm really excited to see how you do at your first Pro Tour and beyond. How many Pro Points do you have this season?
So with my finals, I got 6.
Okay.
And then with the 2 upcoming Pro Tours, you always get 3 per Pro Tour. So I'm already at 12 without... without all the GPs this season and without a potential good Pro Tour result. So, yeah, I'm really hoping to make silver and get another Pro Tour fight. That would be insane, but we're going to try hard for that.
Yeah, and that's not bad at all because silver's 20 points, right?
Exactly.
So, a couple good finishes at, GPs and then scoring a couple extra points at each of the Pro Tours. And that's awesome. Like, it's definitely within reach. And we wish you the best of luck for that because we love seeing – past guests go on and do great things. So that's going to be awesome. Are you going to be in the World Magic Cup this year?
No. Unfortunately, I didn't because they changed up the format and it was like nationals now.
Oh, right.
So you had to be 1 and 2 at the tournament. And I did well enough in constructing, but limited that just...
Got you again.
Yeah. It got me again. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, good luck in practicing for limited. That'll be... Good luck there. So, Prodigies, I want to remind you, if you want to connect with Leon, the best place to do that would be on Facebook. Just join the Prodigy Facebook group. Look for MTG Pro Tutor. The Facebook group pops up. We're going to get Leon in there, and you can do a post, tag him in it, and then say thanks for being on the show, ask questions, but that is where you can find him. So, Leon, as we close things out, what is one last parting piece of guidance you have for us? Either something you already said that you want to emphasize or something new you want to leave with us here at the end.
Be passionate about Magic. If you don't like it, just take a break.
Love it. Leon, I want to acknowledge you for your contributions to Multiverse. And thank you so much for your time, for sharing your experiences and your stories with us. You are a hero among planeswalkers, and it's been a blast chatting with you. May you never be mana screwed. Always draw what you need and depart every plane victorious.
Kind words, Sean, but thanks a lot for having me. I really liked it.
Leon, thank you again for being on the show. Episode 243 was a blast and wouldn't be possible without you. So thank you. That was so cool to have you on. I love learning from you. Prodigies, I hope you learned a lot as well. And you can get the show notes at mtgpro2.com/Leon Vanderlinden. There'll be the cliff notes of what we talked about, as well as links to any resources that were mentioned. And if you want to carry on the conversation about Magic and learn from great players, you can go to the Facebook group. The Prodigy Facebook group is where you'll find us. Request to join, we'll approve you, and you can get in and rub shoulders with past guests and also other Prodigies. Finally find that safe place to talk about any Magic idea you want without fear of flame spray. We really pride ourselves in having a positive, uplifting Magic community, so check out our Facebook group. As we close out, thank you again to the patrons. Your support is everything. And Paragon City Games, thank you to you as well for being a sponsor of the show and providing the cool prizes. Well, Prodigies, loved connecting with you. Get out there and play some Magic this weekend, whether it's at FNM or some other venue. I look forward to connecting again with you real soon. Until then, I'm Sean of the Gathering, and we will see you in the next cast.
This round of MTG Pro Tutor is over. So you don't miss a single episode of MTG Mastery, be sure to subscribe to the show on your preferred podcast listening service for more exclusive interviews, deck building tips, and elite content. Or visit mtgprotutor.com to stream it straight from the source. We look forward to helping you think and play like a pro.